I'm ready.
Aaron's luck.
I am also ready.
Ready.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the 7th They Shoot Actors, Don't They? Podcast. It's been a long break since number 6.
Yep.
Oh, boy.
We remember, didn't follow through. We're gonna
remember when we did number 6? We were talking about all our tip reports. Oh, we got so busy.
We're so busy.
We got so busy.
Full lots of work.
Lots of important things have been done.
Yeah.
Important things. Lots of things filling the ledger. But today, as the year draws to a close, we are talking about our favorites of 2009. Everyone's doing their favorite of the decade, ignoring 2009. So we're just doing 2009. We are saying favorites and not best.
Yep. I'm saying best.
Jeff is saying best.
No, I'm not. I'm going with favorites. I have a couple that are not the best films of the year.
Yeah. I have at least one honorable mention that I honestly do not believe is one of the best films of the year, but I loved it, so whatever.
I have a couple distinct guilty pleasures on my list too.
Yeah.
And there's also just gaps in our viewing that we haven't had the chance to see yet, because the year is not yet over, and we just haven't had a break yet to stuff our faces full movie. I know Jeff still has to see Lovely Bones.
It's not coming out until January in Toronto now, and I hate
know.
It.
That stinks.
I don't like it at all.
That stinks.
I just saw a trailer for it for the first time, like, went to the movies the other night, and saw it. I hadn't seen anything. I'd been kind of staying away from the hype. Whoa.
It's on my list with Avatar in terms of movies I don't really care that much about, but given the track record of the directors, I'm curious about, but I'm not particularly excited about them on their own merits.
I feel the same way, and I worry that it might be stupid, but it'll probably be awesome anyway.
Maybe.
I'm keeping trailer free.
It's so hard going to the movies and seeing trailers that you're like, oh, but I wanted to just go in fresh with that one. Oh, well.
I love trailers.
I do also love trailers.
Sometimes I don't.
All right, so we're each going to do a top 5 of the year and a couple honorable mentions. Would you like to start, Jeff?
Sure. Are we going to do each of us does our number 5?
And then I think we should.
That's too much pressure on me.
I think we should each do 5 to 1 and respond appropriately with oohs and ahs. That way we can best judge each other rather than just our choices.
Whew. Oh, I like this. And I realized that because I am a dork, I wrote mine in alphabetical order, but now I'm going to do them in order of bestness. For personal favoriteness.
She's sorting them on her iPhone.
Sad but true.
Okay, where's the best filter on mobile Excel?
I've rated all of these, but they're all 4 stars. So my iPhone doesn't know.
I rated them all according to the alphabet. All right, Jeff?
All right. Number 5, and this isn't one of the best, but I think it's just probably the most ambitious movie I saw all year, is Siam Sona's Love Exposure.
Okay.
It's a 4-hour-long romantic comedy, kind of, with, like, action and religious cults and upskirt photography. And it's crazy. But actually fills the 4 hours really well. Doesn't feel boring at any point, and when you're done, you're like, yeah, all right, that needed to be 4 hours. But if you told someone that, like I'm telling you right now, you're probably like, that doesn't need to be 4 hours.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Then number 4, another Japanese film, was Symbol.
Oh, yeah.
Which, again, it's just, not again, but I just thought it was so individualistic and sort of, I don't care, I have the freedom to make whatever kind of movie I want.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only two plots, but it intercuts between the story of a luchador wrestler in Mexico, and then a dude who wakes up in pajamas in a white room and starts poking at little baby dinks in the wall. And
such a hard film to describe, really, yeah. But truly one of the most enjoyable viewing experiences. Yeah, yeah. Like,
now try describing it without the words baby dinks.
I'd rather not. I'm going to try actually and work that possible into the rest of my movie choices.
What is the baby dink ratio?
What's the baby dink moment in this movie? Number three?
Number three is Chandni Chowk to China.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I like,
you're big on length. Your top five is that's a day of viewing. Yeah.
I'm just all about the fun this year, I think.
I guess so.
That was a really fun movie. For the fans who want to know, we went to see this movie for Jeff's birthday last year, and or this year, I guess, at the beginning of this year. Yeah. And it really, truly, it was like almost 3 hours, but truly like nonstop hilarity.
Chop socky Bollywood action.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's my number three. Number two, Star Trek.
Oh.
Good call.
Yeah. Good call.
That
good
will
call.
Probably make it onto multiple lists, yeah. I'm guessing.
Low in the baby dinky.
but what it lacks there, it makes up for.
In Kirk.
Spock.
And Bones. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I found that to be probably the most entertaining, just fun popcorn movie of the year.
It is very fun. It is very fun.
And then number one is Dogtooth.
I guessed as much. I thought Dogtooth would be your number one, which I still haven't seen. That's a gap on my list as well.
Yeah.
And
it's coming out through Kino next year early.
So. Oh, really?
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, that's exciting.
Can't remember when, but I think before April at least.
Okay. I'm very excited for that one. Isn't that Greece's official entry for
I think it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
very
have a hope in hell, but
yeah, and I don't know, I'm really eager to see it again. I might not like it as much on the second viewing, but it's something that I've thought about and can't stop thinking about sort of when I was trying to put together this, like, nothing struck me as much like as Dogtooth.
Wow. So.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
And any honorable mentions that didn't quite make the cut for whatever reason?
I do. We were supposed to limit it to two or three.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to read a list of 10 really fast. Slow it down the audio.
Okay, go nuts.
The Loved Ones, Where Grace Dead, Hump Day, Best Source Movie, Brock and Rank, Good Times Will Never Be the Same, Landscape Number 2, Instant Swamp, The Forbidden Door, Lightning Silent Movie Picture, and Wake in Fright.
Some good choices in there. Some good choices in there.
Slow it down. They sound even better.
Loved Ones could also make my list, too. That's such a good movie.
Yeah,
that's one
movie.
That almost made my top five and would certainly make my top 10.
I nearly swapped it with Symbol on my list, but
that's a great movie.
I love that movie as well.
Kind of regretting that's not on my list. It's such a
now
satisfying movie.
It was great. It was great.
Definitely, it was the best surprise of TIFF.
For sure.
Katarina, are you done reorganizing?
I am done reorganizing, and I have a top five, and I have five honorable mentions. One of which...
Here I was like, I was all worried about adding like a third to my honorable mentions. Oh man, that's arrogant. Adding a third to my best mentions.
Surely those other guys won't dare go over two films.
They will toe the line. They won't put up with this.
So, I have some overlaps with Jeff's list. My number five film is Symbol, which I saw a screener of before the film festival and then was very excited to see it on the big screen and found that the big screen experience just made it like all the more fun. And I, even though I knew what was coming, I still felt delighted at every surprise. And I feel like I would watch it again and still be just as delighted. And it really stayed with me as like the most sort of, what the fuck kind of experience of the festival. And yeah, I really loved it.
Awesome.
My number four film was Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call of New Orleans.
I thought that would make an appearance on your list.
Yep. Good call. Really liked it. Was surprised at how much I genuinely enjoyed it, as opposed to just finding it to be sort of a guilty pleasure because Nicolas Cage is hilarious and because I'm a Herzog fan and therefore sort of have to like his output, but I actually genuinely liked it, and if it hadn't been his film, still probably would have made my list. So.
Well, when Nicolas Cage is good, he's fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, that guy has done some amazing movies, but just not in recent memory so much.
It was nice to see him get back
on form.
Yeah, back on form, exactly. My number three film, another overlap with Jeff, is Dogtooth.
Uh-huh.
Definitely one of the greatest surprises of my festival. I had no idea what it was about going into it, other than that the people who had seen it said that it was disturbing and crazy. And it was really amazing. I really had no idea what was coming at any point, and at the end found the ending and the whole experience so satisfying. It's definitely stuck with me a lot since then. My number two film, another TIFF discovery, or actually a Cannes discovery that I saw again at TIFF and liked even more the second time around, was The Misfortunates, which is Belgium's entry to the Oscars. And it's just, it's one of those kind of movies that if Ken Loach directed it, would be like an automatic winner of every award, because it's Flemish, like probably not that many people will see it, and it's sort of dirtier than, you know, than it would be if it was an Irish family. But it's just, it was one of the most enjoyable, emotional roller coaster kind of movies. I felt so much love for the characters, and it was a kind of emotional experience that I rarely have at the movies. I don't get wrapped up in the sort of the family, you know, on screen that much, and not like, I don't, you know, cry at movies and that kind of thing. And I just felt like that one took me for a ride that I was not expecting.
That's a poster quote if ever.
Took me on a ride I was not expecting.
I totally think I know what your number one pick is going to be, and I totally disagree.
My number one pick was Enter the Void.
Yep. I was right!
Yeah. I really...
I've heard from a few people that's their favorite movie of the year. I still haven't seen that one, and have close to no desire to, but...
It's not worth seeing on video at all. If you can't see it on the big screen, like, don't bother. It's a stupid
idea. Great movie.
I think it is the best cinematic experience that I had all year. And
wow.
Yeah, like, truly, it floored me completely.
Okay, now review it as if you weren't getting a hand job while watching it.
I felt like I was...
If you didn't have can sex immediately after seeing this movie, how much would you have liked Gaspar Noé's new joint?
You know, I'm a big fan of his work. I wasn't crazy about Irreversible. I loved I Stand Alone. And this one just was a completely different thing. If I didn't know that it was his movie, I never would have guessed that it was him.
Really?
Like, it didn't seem like the others. It kind of did.
Totally a Gaspar Noé movie.
I just loved it so much. I can't even... It was like a visceral response where I was like, holy shit, this is the film for me.
Yeah. You know what? So Contra Tous is among my favorite of all time list.
Yeah.
Like, I love that movie.
I think it's very good.
Yeah.
So I'd probably dig this.
Enter the Void has the best credit sequence I've ever
seen. That's what everybody else says. Even people that don't like it are saying those credits should win best
picture. And that's what blows my mind too, is that credit sequence wasn't on the print at Cannes.
Yeah, I didn't even see the credits.
Wow.
If that credit sequence hadn't been there, I would have been so much more impatient with that.
Who's even doing this?
I just would have been confused.
What is this, a trailer?
This 3-hour trailer sucks.
How long is the movie?
Title.
So yeah, that was my number one. And then my honorable mentions, one of them I hesitated about putting on the list only because it played TIFF like a couple years ago, and I felt like, does it even count as this year's movie? But it got a theatrical release this year, so I feel like I have to acknowledge it because it's so amazing. It was The Hurt Locker.
Hurt Locker. Okay. Yeah. I've got a couple that I'll throw in the honorable mentions now that I'm dramatically increasing my honorable mentions list as of now. But there's a couple that... I've seen on a couple lists here and there as a 2009 movie that I saw last year or even a couple years ago that I think are great and would make my list otherwise, but I don't want to I don't want to get into that crazy game.
Yeah.
But anyways.
Yeah, so the Hurt Locker, I mean, it's just worth mentioning because it's so good.
I thought that might be way up on your list.
I really, really like it. It probably would have been around the bottom of my top 10.
Okay.
But I didn't feel it. My honorable mentions were more the smaller films that I thought wouldn't be seen.
Yeah. They shoot actors boost, right?
Yeah.
I kind of went the other...
The films Michael Greenwood needs to go see.
our fan.
Shout out.
Yeah, holler, buddy. I'm tagging you. I'm tagging you with this podcast.
Yeah, my top five was mostly festival films, and I feel like my honorable mentions are mostly theatrically released regular old movies that I just really liked, but I wasn't quite top five material.
Sure.
So other films on my honorable mention list, Star Trek, for sure. Mm-hmm. Really loved it. Really liked the way that it dealt with the sort of history of that series, and I'm a big fan of the shows, so I kind of was very curious to see how they would deal with it, and I just thought they did it really well. Fantastic Mr. Fox, also on my honorable mentions list. I'm such a huge fan of the book that I really was more apprehensive than maybe ever before in my life that they would ruin my childhood favorite.
Yeah, I feel that way, especially after seeing Where the Wild Things Are, which I fucking hated.
That's on my haven't seen yet list of the year, and so I can't...
I love it, but I'm hesitant to watch it again in case I don't like it as much the second time.
It felt really cynical to me, and I'm worried that Fantastic Mr. Fox, like, every trailer I've seen for Fantastic Mr. Fox, I'm like, I'm done with this iPod on shuffle bullshit idiots making cutesy jokes thing, and I want to see this book I grew up with and love. Like, I love Roald Dahl.
Yeah,
and
me too.
I don't want to see it get the Wes Anderson treatment. And I say that as somebody who likes Wes Anderson, but has kind of lost patience with his routine.
I too have basically lost patience with his routine, but I just felt like the script had enough Noah Baumbach in it that I loved
it. Yeah, that might be the game changer, because I love Noah Baumbach a lot more than I like Wes Anderson.
Exactly, and I think that that's why I love the movie. It was definitely his influence that was like noticeable and awesome, and without it, may not have been as good.
Okay.
And then one that was also on, if you managed to make it out on Jeff's honorable mentions list, was also on mine, is Best Worst Movie. I think it's totally the most fun documentary I've seen in years. Loved it.
It's a really good doc.
It's a really good doc. It's so much better than I thought it would be based on what it's about. It's just, like, it's just a totally enjoyable viewing experience.
In terms of docs about film, it's way, way up there. Like, it's up there with, like, Kid Stays in the Picture in terms of just, like, fun picture about movies.
Yeah.
And especially the cult of moviegoers.
Exactly.
And it's so nice, just it's like, there's no cynicism to it.
No. Yeah.
It's a loving portrait.
Exactly. And last but not least, the film that I doubt will make a lot of people's lists, but made mine, kind of a guilty pleasure, but I don't care. I loved it so much. Crank 2 High Voltage.
Good call.
Love that.
Very good call.
It's a very, very fun movie. Yeah, it's a very fun movie.
It surprised me with its own ability to, like, be a kind of fun that seemed like it might have been out of its league.
You know, Crank would have made my best of the year. Crank 2 doesn't. But I love Crank 2. It was fun. Well, you guys are decidedly highbrow compared to my list.
I'm so not highbrow.
You're pretty highbrow. So many foreign names, Jeff. See, part of the problem was...
The Japanese? Come on!
As you guys know, I didn't get the chance to see near as much stuff as I would have liked to during TIFF. So I probably have bigger gaps in my viewing than you guys, but I'm maybe also the biggest genre film booster of the three of us.
Aaron's insecure about his list.
I can't wait.
No, I'm not. And I felt like...
Let's hear your little tiny cute list.
What movie did you think was good? But I felt like in terms of genre film this year, that Hollywood did the job of the indies. I was really disappointed in terms of indie genre film, but Hollywood blew the pants off it. So, here we go.
Without further ado,
my number five, which I know is on no other list. There's no way. Taken.
Oh, I really like that movie, actually. I'm glad that it's on your list, because I really enjoyed it. And I kind of forget about it now, but...
It was the beginning of the year, quiet little video release after getting... It's another movie that got a European release, I think, sometime
last year,
and then it came here.
But I'm throwing it here, because I didn't know anything about it until this year.
I still haven't seen it, so I should.
It is very fun. I think I watched it one night by myself, and then the next night I was watching movies with a friend, and was talking about Taken so excitedly that she was like, do you mind watching it again? And I was like, I would absolutely watch it again. So I watched it twice in 2 days, and was thrilled. It is so fun.
Yeah, I went to see it in the theater, and walked out of it, like, having heard mixed reviews, and I walked out of it like, what is people's problem? Don't they enjoy fun movies anymore? What the hell?
There's a questionable moral code behind Taken.
For sure.
But I loved it. Number four, Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really fun summer blockbuster. Unlike, I've had more fun at that than summer blockbuster since I can remember.
Right.
And it's smart, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't dumb down anything. And the way they dealt with the continuity in it was really smart. Number three, District 9.
Oh, good choice.
Still haven't seen it. God damn.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's so good.
I'm not much of a sci-fi fan, and for Star Trek and District 9 to be among my favorite five of the year is pretty amazing. Yeah, yeah, District 9 is...
It is. Actually, I'm sorry that it didn't make it on any of my lists, because it was so good. I was so surprised by it. Like,
I think it's an all-timer. I think it's the kind of sci-fi movie that will be... It's Blade Runner caliber in terms of how people will think of it in 15, 20 years.
Yeah, it's a total game-changing sci-fi
idea. Yeah, amazing. Number two, Antichrist.
I figured that would be near the top of your list.
I'm surprised it didn't make yours, Kat. And I didn't expect it to make...
No.
Jeff's, but I thought it would make yours for sure.
I actually am surprised that it didn't make mine too, and really it should have been somewhere on there. I just kind of, five was so difficult, but I really, really like that movie a lot. Like, I really don't have any of the problems that people seem to have with it, and
the problems with Antichrist, I think, is the... If you accuse Antichrist of misogyny, that is the thinnest possible reading of this movie. You can't intelligently watch this movie and declare it a misogynist film.
Yeah.
When he's crediting misogyny research.
Yeah.
Exactly.
In the film. Like, he's fully aware of what he's doing. And, you know, you can't declare a movie in which bad things happen to women to be misogynist.
Yeah, it's pretty ludicrous, isn't it?
Yeah, it's more than that.
And in fact, thinking about it now, that is probably, like, if I was still in school or something, that is the movie that I would most want to write a paper about that I saw this year, because I walked out of it with so many questions and thoughts that I just wanted to discuss with others. Like, I was like, who else has seen this movie so that I can talk about it for 5 hours? It really, like, sparked a lot of thought that, you know, which is a kind of reaction that I really enjoy having after a movie, and doesn't often happen. Usually they're just entertaining, and then that's that. But yeah, that one probably should have been on my list.
I'm glad you had to suffer that. You saw it at Cannes, and then you had to wait until September for more people to see it.
Some, like, great October conversations, but they were like 6 months too late, guys.
Yeah. I think it's really remarkable, and on a surface level, I think it's really beautiful, and there's some great chilling moments in terms of it being a straight-up horror. But yeah, I thought it was great. And my number one, Inglourious Basterds.
Hey!
Possibly my favorite Tarantino movie.
You know what? I cannot wait to actually see the recut, because I saw it at Cannes, didn't really like it, but didn't hate it. And then everyone else who had the same reaction as me has subsequently seen the theatrical version and loved it. And I feel like I am meant to love this movie, and I just haven't actually seen the cut that made it to theaters.
Jason, who
and
had
I can't
seen,
wait.
Jason had seen both and had told me about a couple of the changes, and he said he liked it a lot more seeing the major theatrical release.
Mm-hmm.
But there are cuts that were made to the con version, which removed so much of the context of it. Like, there were certain scenes he mentioned where it totally removes any setup for a big set piece, and you can't do that and have it not be gibberish. But yeah, I know. Yeah, Jeff, you are not a fan of that movie.
No, at all. And again, I didn't hate it. It's just it was a disappointment to me. I thought it was really flat.
You know,
I thought only two sequences had any sort of significant impact. I guess like just style to them that worked.
Mm-hmm.
There's that horrible David Bowie sequence, which everyone says is their favorite.
You know what? I hated that when I saw it, and I feel like I would like to revisit it and see if I still hate that, because at the time I just felt like it was the worst song choice, and I just couldn't. It took me out of the moment entirely, and I don't know. I'm really curious to see it again, because I feel like Tarantino is a director who doesn't always make perfect movies, but ever since I saw Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction when I was in high school, yeah, I have basically been willing to give him the benefit of the doubt no matter what, yeah, always, and I kind of feel like this one deserves a second chance.
I certainly wasn't big on the Bowie scene like some people, but it didn't bother me enough that I had a problem with it. I mean, same thing, people say the same thing about Mike Myers' scene as well.
Yeah.
Which,
yeah,
I thought was perfectly fine. Like, it's
totally fine.
Yeah, it's the least over-the-top moment in that
I actually
movie.
Liked Mike Myers in it. I kind of thought, like, he's not in it for long, but he's pretty good.
I thought it was so fun. I absolutely loved it. And the time flew by for me. So, anyways, my honorable mentions, couple documentaries that I thought were really great and very nearly made the list. Anvil, the story of Anvil.
What a good one. Yeah, I totally forgot about it.
It's good.
And I think maybe because I saw it at Hot Docs last year. So I didn't think of it this year, but that's a great one.
Another really good one, which has yet to be sold, apparently, Winnebago Man.
Oh.
I still haven't seen that.
Oh, very, very good documentary, and I like it more than Anvil. I thought it was, like, really sweet, really life-affirming, really smart. I absolutely loved it. A couple British joints that get honorable mentions and just barely did make it. Julia, the Tilda Swinton movie.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
It's very good. And Tilda Swinton is amazing in it. It's a little overlong, but it's quite good. Harry Brown.
Really like that movie.
Almost took the Taken spot for
That's
Old Men Wreaking Revenge.
Yeah,
I don't know why you didn't like Harry Brown.
Jeff apparently didn't like it. But Aaron and I are in agreement. This movie was very good.
It's so pitch black with that weird horror score that it was like, it was everything I wanted.
Where Gran Torino sort of paints like this ridiculously sort of, I don't know, two-dimensional sort of tough guy, which is hilarious and entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
In Harry Brown, the Michael Caine character is so an old man.
See, I disagree completely with that.
In a way that was amazing. So when he is tough, the juxtaposition between him in slippers in his kitchen, like crying because his friend died, versus him, you know, like shooting some guy in the face or whatever is so, I just found it amazing.
I bought into it more than I bought into Gran Torino.
See, I don't think Gran Torino is great, but I feel like Clint Eastwood does a much more convincing old man. he's a totally three-dimensional character in that movie, whereas Michael Caine in this movie, totally cardboard for me.
Oh no.
He's just the quiet old man.
The opposite way.
These little quiet moments like, oh, he looks at the pillow where his sick wife usually sleeps, and just like, ugh. And then Harry, you were a Marine, weren't you? Uh-oh, it's gonna get violent. Did you ever kill a man? You can't ask me that.
Spoilers!
I guess a little. I felt it was very calculated, and tried to make the violence seem really intense, and a lot of CGI blood for no reason.
CGI blood, but there's also a couple good gasps, I thought, in it. There's some nice little unexpected set pieces. Anyways.
And my spoilers were like 25 minutes in, and I would have freaked out if I were you.
But
you're not me, so you're probably fine.
And I'll also say another solid genre movie that very nearly almost made my list, and maybe if I had a little more time removed from it, it would make my list. But Bader Meinhof Complex.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
Excellent.
Hmm.
It's long. It's about 2.5 hours long. And the first half is almost like an action film. And then the second half is the years that the Badr-Meinhof gang, the Red Army faction, spends in prison.
Oh.
But it's really, really interesting. And I think the only reason why it doesn't make my list is I felt like they, in the service of concentrating on a few characters, they gloss over really big moments where you're going through the movie and you're like, wait, did she just get killed? And did that guy just get arrested? I'm not sure what. And they do that so much with anyone beyond these kind of core three characters that when people pop up again later, you're like, not exactly sure who the fuck that is supposed to be. That is now being released from prison. But, in terms of the history, it's really, really interesting. It does a good job of putting in context the period in which the Red Army faction was doing other stuff. So, huge thumbs up to Badr-Meinhof Complex, but not quite as good as Taken or Star Trek.
I'm kind of glad that we live in a time where you can be like, well, it's no Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
And that's a real thing.
Yeah. All right, so we're done with 2009. Forget about 2009, everybody.
Screw this year.
Now we're talking about the best of the decade.
And we said that we weren't going to, but you know what? We're only keeping it to one film each.
Yeah, one film each.
No nothing. No mentions, no honorables, no gibberish, just one film each.
Best of the aughts.
Best of the OOs.
So glad they're done.
Yeah. Awkward having anything to call them.
Debating over what to call that shitty decade. All right, so Kat, you deliberated longer on this than any of us, I think.
Oh my god.
And fucking conclusion did you come to?
I had like a complete existential breakdown because I couldn't come up with a fucking excuse my language. I couldn't come up with a favorite movie, like one film that really stood out. But I think the pressure of being like the best of the decade as opposed to just the best of the year was too much, and I felt like I couldn't handle it. And
who's gonna put our seal on their DVD?
I know.
That is a weighty question to answer.
My film's in the Criterion Collection, so I'm fine.
Spoiler.
Oh, spoiler.
I'm just saying.
So you guys are gonna think that this is 100% stupid, but part of the reason that I was having such a hard time with it was because I feel
it's
like
Garfield too. It's Tale of Two Kitties.
Tale of Two Kitties. Beethoven 6. No.
Air Bud. Semicolon. Whatever.
I feel like only time will tell. But part of the reason that I had a hard time coming up with a
Will Cat's Choice stand the test of time?
Well, no. This is the thing. I made a call, and it's a film from 2002. But ultimately, I think that 5 or 10 years from now, I will look back on this decade, and actually Enter the Void will probably be my number one film.
Wow.
That is what I actually think.
Wow.
But I didn't want to be too hasty with the picking a film from this year, like, not giving the entire decade a proper kind of, I don't know, place in
people would think you were a Philistine.
Exactly.
Also, you want to have a good movie as your
So I ended up choosing the film. I had like a list of probably 5 films that I thought could easily be the number one because of the amount that I enjoyed them and the extent to which I feel like they are masterfully crafted and really like incredible. But in the end, I chose a film that stuck with me. I think about it at random times and I don't know why. Like, it's just kind of like burrowed its way into the back of my head, and it's been there for 8 years now, and there's nothing I can do about it, and it's just always going to be there. And the film is Songs from the Second Floor.
Oh.
Which was from 2002, I believe, and it was directed by Roy Andersson, who is a Swedish filmmaker. He's directed like hundreds upon hundreds of commercials, and if you look at him up on YouTube, there's a lot of like really clever TV commercials that he's done. He hasn't made that many feature films. I think his most recent one was in 2007. It's called You the Living, and he just has this like sort of Scandinavian absurdist dry kind of humor, and there are sort of like Songs from the Second Floor is really disconnected vignettes that make no sense, aren't related to each other, and kind of are 100% just absurd. But there was something about it. I saw it at TIFF when it played that year, I guess 8 years ago or so, and I didn't know what it was going in. I went to it because a friend of mine invited me, and I haven't been able to really stop thinking about it since. Wow. So when I was coming up with my list and I had all of these like important, awesome movies kind of, you know, vying for the top spot, in the end I picked sort of, I guess, the underdog, because that's the one that I think of most often when I think about movies that have really affected me. It's not probably the best of the decade, but it's, I probably could honestly call it a favorite.
We're not saying best, we're saying favorites. Exactly. Although I think I said best earlier, but
really
favorites.
Yeah. So that's my favorite.
I'll have to ADR that.
Songs from the Second
Favorite.
And you know favorite. What? When that film came out, Ingmar Bergman came out of like whatever kind of isolation he had been in as an old man at the time, yeah, and said that it was like the best Swedish film of recent memory, wow, or whatever. Like he made some sort of, you know, public statement about how he thought it was amazing. And at the
this
time,
is the
thought,
only
really?
Memorable Swedish film aside from my catalog.
If it's not me, it's this or bust.
I am going to allow him to say that Ingmar Bergman directed Songs from the Second Floor as my seal of approval.
There
well,
you
that's are. Interesting.
Yeah.
Jeffrey.
Mine was easy.
I think I
gave it less than a minute's thought.
Both of you guys
me
were
too.
Like,
yeah,
this is a no-brainer.
I knew it.
And
I've
like labored over it for weeks.
I just had to double check it came out
in the last after decade. 2000.
Yeah. Yeah. And it did. Came out in 2000, and it's In the Mood for Love.
That was probably number two on my list.
Yeah.
Good choice.
I really thought I actually didn't pick it because I kind of suspected it might be yours. And I was like, that's gonna be boring if it's both of ours. But yeah, that's a movie that I also think about,
yeah, it's
very frequently.
One of the most gorgeous films ever made. Makes me sad, sad, sad every time I watch it.
Yeah. Pretty much impossible. Like, you have to actually be the Tin Man and not have a heart to not feel sad watching that movie.
Or super racist. my favorite film of the decade, which is probably also an easy guess for you guys.
I guessed it drunk the other night.
You did guess it drunk the other night. There Will Be Blood. I absolutely love that movie. I think it is, I think it's not just the best of the decade. I think it's P.T. Anderson's best, who's already an amazing director. I think it's one of the best American films ever made. And I think it's a real, real achievement. I could talk about that film all the time. And I rewatched again recently, kind of debating whether or not my memories had colored it, and was still blown away by it. Blown away. I think that movie is absolutely gorgeous.
I think you're definitely right that it's his best film, and that it's totally a film that's going to enter the sort of American
it's canon. Yeah.
Like, no doubt. Last year, I felt like it was so head and shoulders above everything else that anyone made.
Yeah.
Really. Yeah. Really.
And yeah, that's, speaking of films that have stuck with you, I mean, there's sequences in that thing that absolutely kill me. So we're going to wrap up this podcast with our picks of the week, a long absent feature. I guess you guys haven't... Nobody's been in movies for the last 3 months because they've been without our picks of the week. Kat, what are you looking forward to seeing over the next couple weeks to the end of December, I guess?
Well, there's definitely a few December, you know, Christmas-ish releases that are going to be hopefully exciting. But for my pick of the week, I've chosen In the Loop, a film that probably should have made some kind of list of mine because I thought it was just hysterically funny. And it's being played at the Review Cinema over on Rossdale's this weekend. 9:20 in the evening on Friday, and then matinee shows at 4 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday, the 12th and 13th. Really funny, and if you like it, check out the TV show,
The Thick of It. Yeah.
The Thick of It. I've never seen the show, but I thought the movie was so funny.
I recently started watching The Thick of It, and didn't know that the movie's based on, like, it's the same characters, same people. I knew it was the same creators, but I had no idea it was the same characters and everything.
Yeah.
The show is really, really great, and so filled with hilariously foul language.
As is the movie.
And actually, the Thick of It can be viewed entirely on YouTube.
Really?
Yes, indeed.
Ha! Huh.
Do the creators get any royalties from your YouTube viewing?
Who knows? They haven't released that shit in North America yet, so I do what I can. Same to you, Charlie Brooker. I'll tell you to your face, Charlie Brooker. I'll watch your shit on YouTube. Come out with it in North America.
Seriously.
I think, what is it Dead Time? What's his zombie show?
Dead Set.
Dead Set. I think IFC is showing it next Halloween.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. It's been... I mean, you can get that thing on import now.
Yeah.
It's been forever. You can get it on import DVD. I highly recommend people watch Dead Set. If it was a theatrical movie, it might be on my list. It is fantastic. Really, really smart. Really smart approach to zombie movies. Really, really smart approach to celeb culture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, great stuff. Have you seen it yet, Jeff?
Yeah, I liked it. I didn't love it, but I did really like it.
I really loved it. Jeff, your pick?
My pick's Avatar.
Avatar. When is that? Is that a Christmas Day thing?
It's the 19th, I think.
Okay.
I'm really glad it's not Christmas Day, because then I can see it before Christmas, because at Christmas I'll be busy with family things.
With pagan rituals.
Your family comes above James Cameron? Crazy.
James Cameron is family, Kat.
My family would be like, hey, do you want to open your present? I'm like, yeah, I do want to open my present. It's at the IMAX theater.
Yeah.
Do you know how long I've waited for this new James Cameron movie?
I love Christmas with my family.
Open my socks later.
I love Christmas with my family, but come 6 o'clock, I'm like, let's see what's in the paper. Let's see what's playing later that I can go to by myself. I will probably see Avatar whilst I'm visiting my family. Not super excited for it, but I will give him the benefit of the doubt as a man that has made several masterful sci-fi movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna rule.
Maybe.
Fingers crossed.
I'm gonna fight people.
It's gonna rule. Fight them outside the theater.
Oh, if I get disappointed, I'm gonna be so upset, guys.
And you will hear about it here in January. My pick is, I think I'm going to go with...
Invictus.
With Invictus, yeah. With The Road. I still haven't seen The Road yet. It's a fairly new release. I really love... Cannot even remember the director's name right now. John Hillcoat.
Yeah.
The guy who did The Proposition. The Proposition was my absolutely favorite movie of that year. Really excited to see what he will do with this story. And that will probably be another thing that will wait until I need a break from my family. And I will also add as a caveat, don't watch Precious. That is such a terrifically overwrought movie that I can't believe. I mean, Oprah is a powerful woman. But I can't believe that so many critics are watching this and buying into it being a legitimate great movie. There are so many after-school special moments in this movie that really cloud what is a smart story and has a great actor in it. But it falls pretty flat in a lot of cases.
Probably means it'll win every Oscar.
Oh, yeah. Well, it will sweep. It will sweep.
Will it? Jason Reitman's got a movie
that...
Oh, yeah.
Jason Reitman's got another hot indie movie. How long do people
the indie release of the year.
How long are people going to keep talking about Jason Reitman movies as though they're independent films? This is mind-blowing.
Up in the air, so...
Those of you who are regular visitors to theyshootactorsdontthey.com will have noticed our format change, but people who just listen to the podcast or visit less regularly may be interested to know that we've expanded our scope a bit, writing about a little bit more. Still within the realm of fine arts and stuff that that you'll probably enjoy if you enjoy this podcast. We're covering more in the way of graphic arts, television, comedy, photography, things of that nature, and we are contributing more frequently, which is also a nice feature of the format change. So if you visit us regularly, please continue stopping on by for more content, and if you haven't been in a while, take a stop by at our new look.
We've got an RSS feed. Use it.
Yeah. Why are you being a prick about our RSS feed? It's so
what
easy.
What the hell, man?
Said that to your reader. Why are you going to be a prick about it? So we'll probably try to do another one of these in January. I realize that every podcast is just so loaded down with empty promises and pathetic lies. You don't even want to hear this anymore.
Guys, should we try and do 7 podcasts in January?
Let's do a podcast every day in January to make up for it. I think that's what the people want to hear. So we'll try to do another one of these in January and talk about some upcoming movies for 2010 that we're excited about. And maybe talk about some of the end-of-year releases that we haven't had a shot at seeing yet. The Avatars and the Lovely Boneses, if you will.
I will.
So until then, have a good Christmas and bye.
Bye.
Bye.